August 18, 2023. It's a Watch for Piggy Rose show.
Watt for Pedro show. Happy Friday. Started off the show with John Coltrane that day, November 22nd, 1962, with the excerpt from Every Time We Say Goodbye. And then we had Wayne Pete's Doppler Funk with Message at the Tone. And because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, we got Stuart Liebig. Welcome aboard, Stuart.
Thanks. Howdy. How are you?
I want to give respect and credit for the connect to
Mr. Joe Berardi.
Yeah, your buddy, right? And we played when he was on the show last. He brought some tunes that you both had made a live record.
Oh, right on.
And so that was the impetus. But I know of you from Nels Klein and Block. We'll get into that. But I also got to share the stage with you at a Chris Schlarb event by USC, a tiny little theater, where he would turn on light bulbs when it was each of us's turn. It was a great way to conduct a fucking spontaneous thing like that.
It was a lot of fun. You know, I was thinking that we have a lot of mutual friends, Chris, Nels, Mike Baghetta, you know, Joe, and we've talked really briefly before, but this will be the most we've ever talked.
Okay. Well, I don't want to talk because I want you to tell us about your journey in music. So please bring your earliest musical recollection.
My earliest musical recollection as a player or just hearing something?
No, some people tell me about musical recollections that go back when they're still inside their ma.
Oh, yeah. Well, mine is with my mom, but she was a semi-pro singer who did Renaissance music and did some like Stravinsky premieres and stuff like that in L.A. So some of my earliest things are her actually singing with groups when I'm playing. They're like singing Palestrian masses that I'm playing with my war toys, you know,
okay.
That kind of thing.
And the pad you grew up in, well, she used, obviously, her instrument was her voice, but was there musical instruments in the pad you grew up?
Not really. She had her grandmother's piano, which I have now because my mom passed. But, you know, my dad was kind of virulently anti music because they broke up and all that crap. So not really. I just kind of got the bug when I was about 13 or 14, you know.
So you never jumped on that piano when you
were... not really. Piano kind of scared me.
Let me ask you about school. Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
No, I never was. The things that got me into bass were Paul McCartney and John Paul Jones, and then music teacher played like this Bach thing, this Bach little fugue in G minor. When the bass came in, it was so powerful. I'm going like, oh, hell yeah. So that was sort of, those were the things that got me into being a bass player.
Okay, so you weren't in the band or the choir. I asked that because some schools got rid of their arts programs. Let me ask you this. What was the first record you bought with your own money?
Oh, geez. Good question. I think it was either Revolver or Band of Gypsies. I don't really remember. I did buy a bunch of records from a friend of mine's sister, like early Beatles records. So it's hard to know. Probably like some early Beatles stuff that, I bought from a friend's older sister.
I asked that because when
I had my mom pick up Revolver on the way home, you know, and it was like, it's in stereo. No, it's supposed to be in mono, Mom. I was all ticked off.
I asked that question because when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money, so I'm curious to what you would spend it on. What was the first gig you saw?
The first gig I saw? Wow. Well, you know, my mom was young when she had me, so in like 1966, she was 33, so she's pretty young. So the first thing I really remember was seeing Iron Butterfly at the Hollywood Bowl, and it might have been like Peter, Paul, and Mary and Lee Michaels or something. It was like one of those weird 70s, or late 60s kind of gigs where they had a bunch of strange people on them.
Remember, it's a lot from Pedro's show, so there's no hard questions, there's no wrong answers.
Good to know.
So you said something about the bass. What was the first time you knew what a bass was?
Oh,
why did you choose it?
Well, like I said, it was sort of like, you know, hearing McCartney and kind of like hearing that in my head. And then this thing with hearing this Bach thing was just, you know, the bass voice came in and it was like God speaking. So that was kind of it, really, for me. You know, my stepfather, I think, played some Mingus stuff, but I didn't really key into that because, you know, I was into cartoons and stuff. So
how did you know it was the bass, though?
Fuck if I know.
No, I'm asking you this because I'm asking you this because of my personal experience. Because I, you know, my first gig was me and D Boone saw T-Rex, and everybody was so little and you're so far away, I couldn't. It looked like a guitar.
Right on. I think it's
and
because
the sound was so bad because, you know, arena rock show, right? I couldn't.
Right.
So that's why I'm asking. It's almost like a personal bass player to bass player question. Because I didn't know for a long time. I thought they were just guitars with skinnier necks. I had no idea that bass meant lower even. But get this. As time has gone on, I realized not really four-string guitar, four-string drum set.
Right on. Or a combination of four-string guitar and four-string drum set and four-string upright bass is how I looked at it for a long time, you know. I think it was really just I saw pictures of the Beatles and I saw McCartney, you know, and I kind of just heard, you know, like Carole Kaye and those people burbling away, and I kind of dug the motion and all that stuff. So I think I was attracted to those things, but I don't know exactly how I knew what it was, but that's why I gravitated towards it.
Yeah, okay. And so when did you get your first bass?
August 1st, 1970.
And did you pick it or was it given to you?
I consider that my real birthday sometimes.
Did you pick it or was it given to you?
No, I got some money for like my birthday or something, and maybe I borrowed some money from my mom. And we went to West LA Music in West LA, and you know, there was a Kent bass amp and a Aria violin bass, and so that's what I ended up getting.
Okay, so you did pick it, but it was with money you got from.
Like present. Birthday or something like that. I forget, present. You know, it wasn't a paper route or anything like that. It, you know, that would have been much hipper than how.
No, you repurposed a gift.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it was like,
okay. So
yeah.
Let me ask you this. Well, you did previously say something about a teacher. So I'm going to assume, which is a very fucking dangerous word. My pop taught me. Said that was not spelled that way accidentally.
Yes.
He thought it was like an incredible eureka moment. But
yeah.
But anyway, you were not autodidact. You went to find lessons?
The music teacher at school was a whole different thing. I fell in with somebody who I'm still friends with, and I went, like, he was in that band Block with Nelson, me. And, you know, I've been in bands since we were 14 together. And I, you know, and he's pretty good. So I fell in with some good guys. You know, you kind of push each other, you know, and pull each other along kind of thing. And so that was kind of the first of it. And then I started taking lessons from a guy up at a local music store. And then it was mostly just being self-taught. You know, I kind of like, I had a couple of people give me pointers, you know, older guys at a school I was at. But for the most part, it was sort of like a lot of autodidact stuff. I did learn theory, so that helped me figure things out, you know. Tried a couple of teachers, but I ended up taking, like, classical music in college after a while, and those, you know, the third teacher I had there was probably the best music teacher I ever had in terms of an instrumental thing.
Okay, speaking of Block, you gave me this Block tune. Let's listen.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
for Pedro show. That chunk of music started off with Block doing In the Free Zone. Then we had brand new from Petra Hermanova, Marrow Embers. Ava Mendoza, she's got a new record with Devin Hoff. Mendoza Hoff Revels, and this is Diablada. Hellmore Flames from Fairbanks, Alaska. Penance. Physarium, Snake Made of Man. Thresher with Adirondack Blues. Tomorrow Comes the Harvest. That's the name of the band. Rising Water, The Reprieves. MSSV with Pity Parody, speaking of Mike Begetta, that's his band.
Yep.
And Quartetto Stig with Generator. So, part of that, playing with that teacher at school and being in their bands, what about after school, not graduate, but afternoon, the bedroom band, the basement band, the garage band? I think you kind of alluded to that with friends, you said, like Nels and playing.
Yeah, well, I met Nels in college. So, the afternoon thing at high school was, we had a quintet and we played Allman Brothers and all that stuff. We played some parties and, we thought we were good, played Santana stuff and, basically, we started off playing blues and then it became rock and then jazz and like that. And then, like I said, I met Nels at Santa Monica City College. I actually met him and Michael Preussner the same day because we were all in the big band or whatever it was. Though none of us could read very well, so it was sort of a joke that we were in that. But so that was like 1975 or something like that.
And, okay, so yeah, this is way beyond that thing.
Yeah.
But still, you guys are playing together. You ain't composing yet. You're copying songs.
For the most part. One of the guys that I played with was pretty into, he was a pianist and he's into writing some funny tunes. We were mostly doing instrumental stuff, particularly after we got the Fusion book. And so we were kind of writing some stuff, but not consistently, like with a work ethic,
Well, tell me about Block. How'd that happen?
Well, Block happened because I was on the road for a couple of years in my early 20s, and then I decided I didn't like being on the road, so I wanted to go back to school. So I went to Northridge, and I studied orchestra bass. And, meanwhile, I'm playing like jazz and rock and top 40 gigs and all that stuff, trying to make a living playing. And when I graduated, I'm going I can either try to get a master's and be a not great, upright player in an orchestra, like eighth chair, and play other people's music, or I can form a rock band. So I had met this guy named Chris Mancinelli, who's a drummer. He was a friend of a friend of mine's, and they were rooming together in Boston. I met him when I was on the road there. And I said, hey, man, I have this idea for this band. And the original idea of the band was sort of like combining Cameo and Van Halen, for the shorthand of it. And we ended up doing we sort of talked to a bunch of different guitar players who we knew. And I had, like I said, I had known Nels for a number of years, and I was in Rhino Records one day, and, we're sitting there chit-chatting about stuff, and he goes, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm, thinking about this idea. We're looking at trying to start a band that's, and I gave him the spiel about the kind of deal. He goes, oh, that sounds interesting. So he came down, we rehearsed like a couple ideas, and, Nels is, really fucking good. So he just came up with some amazing parts, and that was sort of like, yay. And then Chris says, well, how about Nick, who's this guy I've known since I was 13? And I said, well, we just broke up in a band, blah, blah, blah. And he said, let's try it. And so that happened, and that was really the shit. And then I had known the singer from another high school guy, and Nick had known her, and actually they had been a couple for a while. And he goes, well, let's try her. So and it worked out great. So that's how the band came together. But basically it was my idea. I had this cockamamie idea of trying to do, you know, kind of a funk and rock thing. And, you know, that was early days of hip hop. So we were, you know, some of us had drum machine and we're fucking around with those. And, you know, so there was, you know, and we were into the minimalist thing. So we were trying to do these sort of interesting grooves that interlocked.
And what was the arc of the band? You guys ended up making an album that never came out, or?
Well, we met a producer, and, you know, he wanted to produce us on spec, and then, you know, we'd owe him money, blah, 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 blah. So we had tried a couple of indie things that didn't seem so interested, and there was sort of a little bit of a discussion about whether we should just press our own record and start going up and down the coast or what have you. And then I sort of set the band up as a democracy. So we ended up going with this guy and we did like two albums worth of master quality recordings. And the record company decided which ones they liked because that's what record companies do. And, they did put out like that song In the Free Zone was the title track, I guess, of our album. And it came out on A&M, and then they decided that we weren't, you know, going to be commercial, which was not like a serious news flash, you know, but this is also right when Nirvana and, Soundgarden and all that hit. And Soundgarden was at A&M and we had the same A&R guy. And I think they decided that Soundgarden was a much more lucrative venue, you know, avenue than what we were to do. So basically they said, do more commercial stuff. And at this point, Nels and Chris and I were not into doing more commercial stuff. And so, we pulled the plug.
Did you guys tour?
You know, we didn't. And that's one of the things that we screwed up. And I don't want to get into all the ins and outs of that. Some of us had toured fairly extensively. Like I said, I was on the road from the age of 20 to 23. I was on the road 10 months out of the year. And so some of us knew what that was like and some of us didn't really. And, we didn't. And that's one of our biggest fuck ups is that we didn't tour.
And how was the material? Was it, like you said, you set up the band like a democracy. Did you compose that way?
Well, you know, particularly early on, what happened was, like, I literally came up with an idea for bassline walking from a place I was working down to the corner diner, you know, and I had this idea of playing, like, instead of playing, bass playing thing, like, so like you hit the low note with your thumb and you pluck the high note and you pop it, right? So I decided, well, everybody does that. I'll try to do that backwards. So that became a tune. So I'd come up with these kind of groove ideas and work them over, and then I'd pull them in, and people would go like, oh, yay, or no, that stinks, and then we'd play that shit. And the drummer did some stuff like that. And then sometimes we just, you know, we were rehearsing in a warehouse where I worked, and we just kind of like jammed, and then ideas came out of that. So it was very, very much sort of like a band, organic sort of, Even if somebody like myself or somebody else planted a seed in it, the idea was that it was an organic growth out of an idea for the band, as opposed to like me going like, everybody plays this, or somebody else saying everybody plays this.
Or somebody coming up with a demo and bringing it in.
Yeah, no, none of that. None of that, really.
When was the last block gig?
Our last block gig was an acoustic gig at Rhino Records.
Was Nels so working there at the time?
I can't remember if he was working there or if he was working at Arcana. He might have been working there, but, you know, it's like he had deep ties there, you know, like a lot of people, you know, he knew were still there. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly how that happened because, you know, we're talking like 32 years ago. So some of my memories on this are not great.
And, did everybody know it was the last gig?
I think three of us knew. I think it was getting pretty close. You know, I you know, we had a meeting at our managers, you know, and I just said, hey, look, you know, I'm done with this. You guys should get a new bass player, and I'll show them my parts.
Even though you started the band.
Yes, sir.
I did a similar kind of thing in a way. Isn't that trippy? The cat who starts a band wants to fucking jump shit.
Well, you know, at a certain point,
I can kind of relate in a way, even if it's your baby.
It's not.
But you don't want to hurt your buddy, so they keep going without me. Okay. I got to pull the plug on us right here because we're at the end of the first hour, the August 18, 2023 wow. edition of the Watt from Pedro Show special. Guest Stuart Liebig. Hold tight for hour two. August 18, 2023. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you. Saw you in the garden, in the twilight glen, so lovely and so full of love, resplendent naked in the wind, reflecting the reflection of the crescent moon. Your marbled skin glowed alabaster in the shadows of a dream. In peace. Amen. Evening fell, and you grew colder. I, emboldened by desire, solitude, and laudanum, the lateness of the hour, sought to warm with trembling hands your chiseled form, and planted dizzy kisses as I shivered in the flowers. A silver drop of rain, and then another fell among the trees. A thundercloud eclipsed the moon in silence, carried on a breeze from heaven. As I listened to the rumbling and on my knees embraced your granite pedestal and whispered up to God my pleas. The troubled sky was ripped by lightning. Thunder frightened roosting birds and howling filled the twisted forest, drowning out my cries. When suddenly your sightless eyes grew bright and gazed upon my own tear filled with hope and mortal fear. Alive! Sleep beside you, and I dreamed of flying high above the ocean and the desert sand. Beyond the pull of gravity I traveled when I felt your hand upon me, gently waking me to join you in the afterland. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Started off the second hour with Quarteto Sting. We'll get into that because we did one last year, last hour. Chester's Book of Pry Bars. Then Doug Wimbish, credible bass man out of Connecticut. Oh, Veneer. Bob, you know, Sugar Hill Gang, Mark Stewart Mafia. I think he's helping the Living Color cats these days. Bob Lord after that, another bass man of New England. Also a composer. USS Nimitz Tic Tac Encounter 2004. Deerhoof. They've repressed their album Chatterboxes. That's a tune. Bombus Prendon. Laudanum. The Moment That I Saw You in parentheses. Roz O'Hara and Lee Kwon Wong with Where To. Finally, Libby Golia. Mitz, Trioism.
Right on.
Two. I got to do, it was Henry Kaiser with Wayne Pete.
Yeah.
Got persuade me to shame myself and trying to play Chuck Coltrane's music, which I love. They're beautiful cats. Also, John Hanera on the drums.
Right, drums, yeah. I saw that gig at the Caves.
I think that's what John does. He gets with cats, interprets Mr. Coltrane's music.
Right on.
Beautiful man. He told me it helped him stop drinking, too. Beautiful.
There you go.
Now, hip us to Quarteto State.
Okay, so after Block, I just said, well, you know, God, the whole, you know, quote-unquote music industry, the record industry is just horrible and
racket.
It has nothing to do with music. So I've been doing all these improv gigs anyway, like Nelson.
I think Elvis Presley.
I toured with Julius Hampel a couple times.
I'm trying to tell you, once I saw Elvis Presley doing them Louisiana hayrides, and he goes, racket. He says, I wish it was a business. And the dude gets really pissed off and asks him if he's smoking marijuana or something. Because he he looked into the camera, the fourth wall thing. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. So basically, I just figured I'm not going to worry about playing commercial music anymore. I'd been trying to like write classical music and all this other stuff, and improv and Quarteto Sting was. I actually had a tour with a guy named Michael Penn, and I thought I was going to make a bunch of money with him, and I didn't. So I pared back my idea, started playing with Jeff and John Fumo and Jeff McCutcheon, and I had a couple ideas, and then I really liked the sound of the band, so I made that a band. So it's almost sort of a reaction to everything that was going on at that point. Unfortunately, Jeff McCutcheon died not long after that album was recorded, and then Dan Morris was recommended by Alex Klein to be the second drummer. So the first tune you played is Jeff McCutcheon, and the second one is Dan Morris. And
Alex Klein, a great drummer himself.
Hell yes, I owe a lot to Alex. He's besides just being like a great person to play with, and you really have to keep up with. He's got me a bunch of really interesting gigs and recommended me for stuff. So I owe both he and Nels actually a lot.
And this trio thing here, Liebe Golia Mintz?
Yeah, that was me. I played with Vinny and Billy with this guy named Steve Lockwood, and I really liked playing with them, and also they scared the shit out of me because they're so good. So I really had to bring above my A game, you know what I mean? And I just got this idea to record some stuff. I wrote some really loose tunes, and I sent it off to this company called Cadence Jazz Records out in New York, and they put that one out, and then I recorded another one, and they put that one out. So I was really fortunate, you know, and, you know, Vinny, as you know, is a great player and a great guy.
Yeah, beautiful man.
Yeah, and, you know, he's, I wouldn't call him literally a mentor, but I watch him really closely, and I have to, like I said, bring my A game. So he's sort of an arm's length mentor, if that makes sense, you know, because I don't go, oh, Vinny, what did you do? I just kind of, like, watch him and, like, go, like, oh, shit, he's playing that. I better, like, figure out how to match that, you know.
Now,
so,
I'm going to make a guess here, but I think this might be related a little to the Quarteto Stig, because it's got Stig in the name. Stigette. Let's listen.
Well, so...
1, 2, 5.
Teresa.
1, 2, 3. Got a man. Done. I think you're fine. And you know that you got to go to the worst. Those who know you are dead. Shut your mouth. Go. We'll fight you strong.
Kidnap them, tear their livers out, and make some kind of satanic pate? Wait, you're chanting. Wait, look. Wait. Unconscious chanting. You're chanting.
I want to kill everyone. Satan is good. Satan is our pal.
Wait. You're chanting. Hey. Once they get in here, it's over, pal.
Yeah.
From Pedro Show. Started that chunk of music off. Stigetta. Was Hector. And then Fence Post. Preparation 74. Diner Roman numeral 2. Then FOD with After We Set You on Fire. The Born Shit Stirs with Religious Fanatic, Ray Shin, Make Your Way to the Exits, And finally, Splinter Group with Eggshell Necklace. Okay, enlighten us to the Quartetto Stig.
Okay,
slash so Stig Getta Connect.
I had a girlfriend who called me Stubig, which is a contraction of my name. And so I actually use that professionally for a while, and I use that for like a couple different online things. And so I'm over at Wayne's for a rehearsal with Nelson him, and his roommate looks at me and goes, "Oh, Stig." So that people call me Stig. I have friends who don't call me Stuart. They just call me Stig, and I have other friends who call me Stubig. So anyway, that's where Stig is a further contraction of Stubig.
You know, you had a project called Stink Bug, huh?
Yeah, that
is
was.
Is that related? You didn't send me any of that music, but is that related to the Stink thing?
No, it's not.
Okay.
That was.
See how dangerous assuming is?
Yeah, it is.
Just made that ass out of you and me.
Indeed. And I can make an ass out of myself very well, thank you, so you don't need to help me.
No, my pop is vindicated.
Stink Bug was, Nels and GE became very tight, and Nels was wanting to play with Scott, and GE and I had become very good friends, because I played in a band with him and Alex and John Fumo back in the early 90s. And so we just started like getting this idea of like some real throwdown. And, then it turned out there was a band called Stink Bug that was probably kind of like a Texas country metal or something. I don't really know, but so we ended up calling it El Stink Bug. I think Nelson GE came up with that name driving up to the Bay Area one day.
And the Proj, okay, it didn't last long, right?
Well, we did one record. We did a number of gigs. I actually have four discs of outtakes from the gig that made the album come out. But we did, but, you know, Nels got super busy. I think he was out with a guy named Mike Watts a lot. Was that you?
It might have been Geraldine Fibbers, because he only did the fourth tour of the first opera with me.
I see.
But there was, during the wrestling record, he did two tours. But I only actually did three tours with him.
Oh, okay. I don't know. All I know is that he got super busy and...
Well, you're right. You're right. Too busy for what? Also, what about Splinter Group?
There's a Berardi connection in here, because he and GE and Karu and I had a band called Unique Cheerful Events, and there was an improv gig band, and then GE and I wanted to get way more into like groove stuff, so Splinter Group is sort of really GE's baby, and what it is he did like drum machine grooves and put them on beat plates. And then, this guy, DJ Chowderhead, who was up out in Orange County would do that plus like, you know, records and spinning shit and, you know, turntable stuff. And we would just like improv on that. So what that track I gave you is one of the shorter ones. And it's, we actually kind of bootlegged that at Knitting Factory because they didn't want you to record stuff. But Wayne was there recording, and we just told him he was running sound for us.
Man, that was a lame pad to play. The one in West Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Sterile cuckoo. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, August 18, 2023 edition, Wild Pedro Show special guest Stuart Liebig. Hold tight for hour three. August 18, 2023, it's the third hour of the Watch for Pedro Show.
made threat today. Listening to low end of change. But it doesn't seem to matter anyway. Cause it's all just the same, all the same. Even if we reach the top, even if Stephen says to stop, and he says,
Bernie says.
Watt for Pedro show. Start off the third hour. It's deja vu all over again, people. Mentones, Howl and Tumble, Tim Holhouse, Even Acoustic, Witch Egg, Baphomet, R04/K-Howl/Explain-Sheeden, finally Treetop Quartet, Stutter Step, Go Stuart with Explaining and Enlightening Mentones and Treetop Quartet.
So the Mentones is, like I said, I was really into the blues singing as a kid, and then I was I sort of started really doing some heavy listening of John Lee Hooker and Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and all that stuff. And also it was about the time I got like that Ornette Coleman box set. And I was going, why are people so pissed off about this Ornette stuff? It just sounds like the blues to me. So that was sort of like my light bulb moment. It's like, what happens if I have a thing that sounds like Little Walter meets Ornette Coleman? So
can I interject just a second? I got done with like last 2 years, 10 John Coltrane bios. And then this one, McCoy Tyner's talking about them sharing a bill in Houston, his hometown, with Lightnin' Hopkins. And whoa. John Coltrane, he talks about watching him looking at Lightnin'. Now, here he's been doing his kind of blues, right, in the jazz, right, you know, but he has never seen this. And he was just entranced. Yeah, McCoy said he tripped hard on fucking Lightnin'. He just had never... And he thinks it kind of informed the last parts of his playing at the end, just being on the, sharing the stage with a cat like that.
I could dig that because there's a whole depth of feeling and nuance and technique that people don't always think about as being technique that creates a really deep, you know, musical experience. So, yeah, I could see where that would change it.
And also, you know, notice he goes away from piano and bass, just playing with Rashid, you know, no chord changes.
Yep.
So maybe that had, you know, because blues is kind of just staying in the one thing. I read this thing about Dusty Hill, a bass brother of ours. Lost just a little while ago. And he played with Lightnin' when he moved from Dallas to Houston, right? He had a band with his brother, and then he was playing with Lightnin'. And he's like, Lightnin', you know, what's the structure? You know, when you go, and he said, Lightnin' said, Lightnin' changes when Lightnin' wants to change.
For sure. Well, but you know, that's the thing about like hearing John Lee Hooker. For me, it's all about the solo stuff because when he starts playing with a band, it just feels like it locks him down. But like if he's just playing, or maybe him and another guitar player or something, but then he's just ready to, he can just flow, you know, and, anyway, so the Mentones was based on that. Do you know Tony Atherton?
Saxman for Bazooka.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I had seen Bazooka played at the Alligator, and I was like, well, damn, I'll talk to Tony. And I said, hey, Tony, I'm looking for a chromatic harmonica player. He goes, yeah, Bill Barrett. And so, you know, I'm also talking to Wayne Pete one day. I said, hey, man, I'm looking for a chromatic harmonica player. Bill Barrett. Okay. I guess it's Bill Barrett I got to look up. And then Bill came over to my place and we played and it was like, oh, hell yeah, this guy's nuts, right? So, because I'm not sure anybody else could play this shit on chromatic harmonica that I wrote. You know, so he and Tony have a great rapport.
Do you remember the Havana Cats? They had a guy who had a giant fucking chromatic.
Oh, really? I don't remember them. But, you know, I'll tell you something about Bill is, like, I lent him the Anthony Braxton solo alto saxophone record. He's like, yeah, I'm going to figure out how to do all that shit on chromatic harmonica.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then, you know, Joe and I have known each other for years. And I said, hey, man, I'm doing this. What do you think? And he checked it out and was like, yeah. And, you know, Joe and I have a pretty crazy rapport, you know. We figured out how to play together where we're sort of going in and out of stuff, and we sound like the car that's going around the side of the hill and spewing gravel off the side, and we're not going over the cliff, but we might kind of thing. So that works pretty good for this band and for us in general. So that's the Mentones. So I did three records with them, and in the middle of that, I had an idea where I wanted to do something a little bit more sort of country, but also make it some of the, like that tune Stutter Step has sort of like a, in my view, kind of an Anthony Braxton thing. And I wanted to have more counterpoint than groove with head over it. So, I had known Scott Ray for from being a trombone player. He played on one of my records, and he helped me workshop a bunch of stuff. But he ended up playing dobro and then lap steel and then pedal steel. And then Dan Klukas I'd known, and he's playing cornet, and he has kind of a dirty sound, so I thought that would be hip. So T-Talk Quartet is sort of an offshoot of the Mentones thing, and it's based on the idea that Hank Williams is sort of – mentor was a guy named T. Todd, who was an African-American folk musician on the streets of whatever town it was, I forget. So it's sort of also my acknowledgement that a lot of white American music, or maybe just American music, period, owes a lot to African-Americans.
There's a great book Nick Tosh has wrote called The Twisted Roots of Country Music.
Oh, right on.
And then, are you aware of a place in New Orleans called Congo Square?
I was there in the 70s, but haven't been there since.
No, but it goes way back as a meeting point where people mixed, with the musics and stuff.
Yeah.
I want to play this other, seems like a spinoff because of the name, Mentat 6.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro's show. Last music for this edition. Start off Mentat 6, Troubled by the Toe. Rubber O Cement with the Sentinel Rat Tail Broadcast. Noisuka, Endless Jazz Ass Jam. And this from only a month ago. Stuart Liebig. 31 July 2023-04.
Oh, yeah, this. I forgot about this.
It's recent. Month.
Yeah.
Last.
That's true. I decided to do a solo gig with no effects pedals or anything. A little bit of maybe buy knock more than I could chew. You know, like thinking about guys like Braxton or Evan Parker or Vinny, you know, doing solo gigs and like, how do I do that on electric bass? Can I do it on electric bass? I'll try it. It seemed like a good idea until about 3 weeks before I had to do the gig, and I'm going like, what the fuck am I doing? I don't think I embarrass myself too much, but it's not, it's mostly for a documentary kind of a deal. Does that make sense?
The guest holds sway on the Watt Pedro show.
Thank God.
Now, what's next? What's the plan stage of your mind concerning music?
Well, you know, the pandemic kind of like for like all of us, short-circuited a lot of stuff. One of the things that I had already written the full Mentat 6 second album. So I'm going to try to get that going again. I had a band called Minim, which I didn't put any of this stuff in, but I'm going to do a third. I've written about 2/3 of that record that I wanted to do. And, but you know, it's like, it's Scott Ray's sister, Vicky's amazing pianist, and Maggie Parkins on cello, and Brianna Gilcher on oboe. And it's sort of a little bit like the Stig Tett stuff, and where it's more sort of pseudo classical composition rather than the Mentones and that whole thing, which is sort of more based in, you know, American vernacular music or whatever you want to call it.
As time has gone on with me, music is more about just being music, and I'm getting really tired of genre names and shit. Like, it seems like a gulag. Are you doing any more playing with Joe Berardi?
Nothing planned at this moment. Well, except for, you know, if we do the Mentat 6 thing, he's going to be all over that.
Okay.
And
where can people find you on the internet if they're curious about your music?
Oh, Christ. Yeah, that's a good question, because I used to have a website, but I just let it go. You know, the other part of my thing is that I've done a shitload of electronica music with modular synths and all this other stuff, so that's what my Bandcamp page is mostly about. There is some stuff like with Joe and me and Vinny and me and some other people. And GE, that band Unique Cheerful Events, is on there, but it's, you know, my Bandcamp thing, which is 60 or whatever records or whatever you want to, dingy releases. So I just kind of went for the bass playing stuff on this.
I got to end the show because we ran out of time. Okay. People, it's the August 18th, 2023 edition of Watt Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.